Feels foreign in my mouth.
Choreographer
was what you were.
Yeah.
Yeah. You taught us all a dance. You taught me some little skippy hop tap dance.
I taught 35 women how to tap dance. That's one of my proudest moments.
Yeah, that is a beat. Oh, gosh. It's going to be a good day.
Hello, and welcome to Grapes and Grain Podcast. I'm Teenie.
And I'm Laura, and this podcast is about our favorite thing in the world,
alcoholic beverages. Well, it's no secret that we love beer and wine. We've spent this whole season picking apart all those products and industries, but there's another emerging industry that's giving alcohol professionals a little bit of pause. I'm talking about the cannabis industry.
That's right. The tantalizing, risque, polarizing, and often misunderstood plant, cannabis. Although weed's cousin, hops, has been cultivated and used commercially for years, marijuana or cannabis has had a much more tumultuous journey into the mainstream consumption.
So true.
Yeah. And in 2018, actually, the 10th U.S. state passed legislation that made recreational marijuana legal. And that's weed just for fun, not for medicinal purposes. And which is crazy to me because that's a fifth of our states. And I can't believe that's happening in our lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, I feel when you say a fifth, 10 doesn't sound like that many, but a fifth kind of sounds like a lot.
It's
like
a chunk.
Definitely a signal of a movement. I mean, I don't think Willie Nelson expected to see legalized weed in his lifetime. So
yeah,
I feel like we've come a long way.
Yeah, it's definitely reaching a tipping point for sure.
Well, both THC and CBD are probably acronyms that you've seen in headlines or maybe had some personal experience with. But today we're going to explore how exactly they interact with beer and wine and the beer and wine industries.
Yeah. And then most people know about the anti-drug campaign of the 80s and the war on drugs earlier in the last century.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of people know it was actually really deeply rooted in racist propaganda. So we'll get into that and how the...
Count on us to give you your uplifting history lesson.
Yeah, peel away the onion. And we'll talk about how the industry of cannabis and booze are evolving together as well. But before we get started, I know I can trust you to have found something very interesting for today's episode. So, Teenie, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
Well, today I am departing from beer. I actually recently met a gentleman who is a, not a distributor, but he's a rep for a winery and a distiller up in Northern California.
Okay.
So this today that I have is Humboldt's Finest cannabis-infused vodka.
Whoa.
Yes.
Cannabis-infused vodka. What does that even mean?
So this is from the Humboldt Distillery up in the famous Humboldt County.
Yes, I've definitely heard of that.
Yes, so it is actually infused with cannabis. So in the same way that you might make a gin, cannabis is the botanical for this vodka.
Gotcha.
And in fact, if you give a sniff, I gave you guys both little samples. Smells very much like a typical gin.
It does.
Honestly, I don't get a ton of, like, weedy character from it.
It's definitely green or, like, grassy, maybe a little herbaceous, but if you will. But it's not skunky.
Yeah, totally. Well, there's no THC in it at all.
Oh, okay.
And this debuted in several states, including Texas, on April 20th. 2016.
Whoa, Texas. Wow, that's kind of hip for Texas.
I know. I can't imagine why on that very specific date.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Mystery.
Timing. It's actually infused with food grade hemp.
Okay.
And it's an 80 proof spirit, so 40% alcohol, and retails for $30 a bottle. So
wow, that's pretty affordable.
Yeah, I brought the gin. You guys have a little snifter so you can taste it.
Highly aromatic.
Yeah, but then I also, for those who are listening, I made some gin and tonic, so I'm excited to wake up with a G&T this morning.
It is. It's morning time. What time is it? It's 10 in the morning. And has a nice whiff of pure alcohol.
Oh,
to
start
the day.
Cheers.
Like we're on vacation.
Yeah.
So it's actually, it's really bright. And in my opinion, it's a really smooth spirit. So like I actually last night had this over a cube of ice, like I might a whiskey. It's very, very enjoyable. And the G&T is not bad either. It's actually not tonic. It's Topo. G and Topo.
Yeah.
All right, Laura, you're up. What you drinking?
What you drinking?
Well, okay, so I kind of had a hard time getting my hands on something for this episode. I don't know if it's just because we are in Texas. Yes.
Definitely.
It is. Yeah, that's why. But there is a Texas company out there trying to make some moves with cannabis and wine-related products.
Okay.
So what I have today for you is a wine cocktail from Texas Vineyard Markets called Forbidden.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, it's a Forbidden. And the other ones had names like Fantasy and Covert.
Ugh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so...
But also describe this label. The people at home need to know that this label is like a girl. She looks blindfolded and really, like, she's being seduced
it's
forbidden.
It's a little... Okay, so she's, just like this... full-lift, voluptuous, like, redheaded woman with her finger pressed to her lips and lace over her eyes. And, like, it's forbidden written over it. And it's very suggestive. It's a little trashy.
Sex sells, Laura.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I should also mention that if you're looking for this hemp seed oil infused wine cocktail from TVM, Texas Vineyard Markets, it is not in the wine aisle typically. It is in that, like, pre-drink mix bottled sugar section of your local market purveyor.
It smells and looks really interesting.
Okay. While you take a sip, I'm going to tell you a little bit of history of this wine. So it was initially started as a concept to be a CBD oil-infused wine, but because of the legislation in Texas, they could not use CBD oil. They had to use hemp oil. And I should also mention that this is not a grape-based wine. The developers or producers found that hemp oil emulsified, blended, just generally typically went better with a fruit-based wine of orange.
Okay.
So this is an orange-based wine.
It is very sweet.
It's quite sweet, I've heard. This one, okay, then the flavors included were sweet tea, like pina colada, like rum and cola, and something else. So what I have for you today is sweet tea.
It's...
Okay. It is. I'm not even trying to be dramatic, but it just, like, elicits that. You know what it kind of reminds me of is that, like Firefly sweet tea vodka?
It does.
But, like, not as alcoholic. So that's good. Maybe people who don't want to be, like, pounding... vodka have another choice.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not even, I don't want to be rude, but it is not that good. I took a sip while you were talking. I looked at Ben and I was like, bah.
Okay, well, okay. So maybe not meant to be used as a wine per se, more of a mixer and some other sort of cocktail?
Okay.
Question mark. I do want to say, like, Mama tried on this one. This is not what they initially wanted it to be. Actually, Elise Hill, vice president of sales and marketing, bemoaned in an interview that until the government, quote, until the government gets off their high horse and leaves hemp alone, we can't do anything with CBD in Texas. So I'm sure these guys tried their hardest, but it just does kind of come across as kitschy and trashy. And I'm really sorry. It's very sweet, not remotely like wine. The packaging is ridiculous. So that's what I have for you in the wine bottle.
Thank you for that.
Sorry to rat on that. But I also brought today a sparkling soda. It's a CBD infused soda from Sprig. Stevia sweetened flavored sparkling water contains 20 milligrams of CBD, absolutely no THC. So that means it will not get you buzzed or stoned. And you can get all kinds of CBD-infused things these days, like candy drinks, foods, and straight oil. But I'm surprised I was able to get this at a store in Texas, honestly.
Yeah, because the law is super gray right now. So the Farm Bill recently passed, which legalized the production and sale of hemp. However, its byproducts, such as CBD, there is a huge legal gray area about where you're allowed to buy it from versus where you're allowed to sell it from. Like, people are advertising that you can buy that kind of stuff here, but then NBC ran a story the other day about how you can still be arrested and charged for CBD products. So, like...
At your own risk.
Yeah, it really is at your own risk. Just because you see a shop on the corner does not mean that you can't get in trouble.
Right.
It's very weird. Just go to Colorado if you want to do that, I guess.
I guess, yeah. So...
Except that CBD is also kind of lauded for its medical benefits, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah, so that's what I have for our beverages today, my friend.
Awesome.
Nice job.
Yeah, lots of beverages. Lots of beverages.
All surrounded the beverages.
By like 9 beverages on the table.
I know. Hopefully I'm not like talking too much with my hands and I knock something over.
Dramatically sweep everything off the table.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's get to it. Although cannabis is an emerging sector of intoxicants, it's also been related to beer because of its close relationship with hops.
Mm. I love hops. Hops are definitely one of my like favorite things on the planet. They make the best beer. They smell so gorgeous.
Good.
And you guys have probably heard of hops as well, since they are a crucial element to any well-balanced beer.
Yeah, absolutely. So hops actually grow from a perennial vine, and they are the main source of bitterness and a balancing agent in beer. You know, you've heard us talk a lot about the four main ingredients in beer, and hops is definitely essential. So as a plant, they are the flowers of a species known as Humulus lupulus.
Ooh, nailed it. I like that. We were saying before we started, what does that have? Six U's in it.
Yeah, it's so sing-songy. Yeah. I love it. Humulus lupulus.
Like
yeah.
And before you go too far, I do want to say perennial vine. I always get confused with perennial and annual. Perennial means it just comes back year after year on its own, right?
Correct.
Like once you plant it, it is there. It's like rooted. Okay.
Absolutely. Gotcha. Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
But when the hops are actually harvested, they're known as hop cones, and they're these beautiful, like, bud-like shape, cute little cones. And they're bright green. They're beautiful. Oh. And if you've ever seen a bud of marijuana, it will likely not surprise you that the common hop belongs to the Cannabaceae family.
Nailed it. Don't lose your confidence after you spit it out.
I know. There are just so many A's in that word.
Yeah. There's a lot of vowels in all of these. What is this, Latin, Greek?
Science.
Yeah.
So in the Cannabaceae family, that also includes cannabis, like marijuana and hemp, and Celtis, which is like hackberry, which I'm not actually sure what that is. So hops and weed, they look alike in the buds.
Mm.
They also have similar looking leaves.
Yeah.
They're like these finger-like long leaves. If you guys have ever been to a head shop, you've probably seen what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then these plants also smell similar because of a compound called terpenes. And those contribute directly to the aroma of both plants. So if you ever hear a beer referred to as dank, that's usually a reference to the hop, weed-like hop character in the smell. And there's this beer that New Belgium makes, actually. They released it last year, 2018. It's called the Hemperer, and it's made with hemp hearts. Mm. So I'll try and get, you know, hemp and cannabis in the name, but it was actually because of that band in Kansas. And if you smell this beer, it smells like a roasted joint. It's so crazy.
Wow. That's really wild, actually. I miss hops. Mm-hmm. I miss hoppy beers. That was definitely when I stopped drinking beer, the height of the IPA movement. And they all that, like, terpenes, I guess, were abundant in that time.
And absolutely.
I miss that.
And then the last thing I'll mention that makes weed and hop similar is that, like marijuana, it's the female flowers or hop cones that are harvested and sold for brewing. So it's all the ladies doing the heavy lifting, hashtag feminism.
That's amazing. I did not know that. That's really neat. Yeah, all the flavor, all the fire, the passion of the plant comes from this.
Exactly.
I will break down cannabis a little bit further, more specifically. So when we talk about ingesting cannabis and these different properties that do funny things to us, make us feel good, treat epileptic seizures, all that type of properties, they're talking about chemical compounds found within the plant. So there are 400 chemical compounds within the plant, but only around 60 of those are considered cannabinoids. Mm. So that is chemical compounds that alter your body in a good way. And we said, so we'll talk a little bit later about cannabinoids and how they're considered their own drug class. And it's pretty neat because of those 60 compounds, they all do kind of sort of different things with a kind of different effects. So some chemical properties are great for treating epileptic seizures, which you've probably heard about in the news.
Sure.
While other chemical properties are more psychoactive for the brain chemistry and make the ingester feel really good or, quote, high or stoned.
Yes, high. In fact, this bottle of cannabis vodka says it's high quality. And
yeah,
I'm sure
cute.
That was
on intentional
purpose.
But yeah, no THC though, so it won't get you high.
It's just funny. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Nudge, nudge, pun, pun. So while some chemical properties will make your body want to be still and relax, there might be other cannabinoid compounds that give you energy to get up and move. So of all of these compounds, only a handful have been studied in depth. And yeah, so a couple of them, like maybe 5 to 10, are really known about and talked about in the media and legislation, but two really specifically get a lot of attention, and that is THC and CBD.
Yeah. And are you going to say the long word?
I'm ready. I am.
I'm ready with the button.
Yeah, sorry, I had to take a drink.
wet that mouth.
THC, that stands for tetrahydrocannabinol.
Woo. Yes.
So if you're interested, by the way, I should mention in the structure or the compound of what these look like and a little more visuals, you can visit our website at grapesandgrainpodcast.com for the corresponding blog post with this episode. But this compound, THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, is what makes you feel warm and fuzzy, like everything is right in the world and like you could eat 40 pizzas. this compound bonds to receptors, I believe, or... in your brain, and it resembles a runner's high, like when you run. And
ooh, like the endorphin feeling.
Yeah, so it's a similar receptor situation. And if you are a new consumer of THC or cannabis, I should also mention trying one of these infused beers or wines from a dispensary or any product. Ask for advice about THC percentages because you don't want to have a bad time.
Yeah, they're... is definitely a way to ingest a little too much THC.
Yeah.
Not that I would know.
Yeah. And you just see it like breaks your heart. And like once someone eats too much, you're just along for that ride.
So, yeah.
And it's not dangerous. Like you'll metabolize it out and digest it out and you'll be rocking it in a couple hours.
Like
but
we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, it might be a little
intense
before you get there.
Yeah. Anyways, that's THC. And then the other property talked about quite a bit is CBD. So that's cannabidiol. Cannabidiol. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that one. Cannabidiol. That one's also very sing-songy.
It is. So this one is what you've been hearing about all over the news in states like Oklahoma and Texas that are talking about legalizing certain elements of cannabis for medical purposes. So, and a lot of states are doing this before they're legislating any kind of recreational THC use in the state. So CBD, or cannabidiol, is what treats epileptic seizures in children. It's used to treat anxiety in adults and in animals. Talk to your vet about that. That's what I read, but I don't know. I don't like giving my animals a bunch of supplements.
Yeah, I've definitely seen those for sale, though, like dog treats infused with CBD.
It's used as a sleep aid, and it is legal in over 30 states. And as Teenie mentioned earlier, there's a lot of gray area with this, though. So, like, I bought the CBD soda at Specs, and my friend's mom sells CBD's oils in, like, a multi-level marketing type company. But, like, I thought you couldn't do that in Texas. I was really confused that I could even find the stuff. So,
yeah, I think it's still, just case-by-case basis.
Not sure what you're on.
Yeah.
So, CBD is usually derived from strains of hemp plant that are high in CBD cannabinoids, but low in THC. So usually it's kind of trade-off. One or the other one's more concentrated, depending on the strain of plant you go with. And typically, don't quote me on this, but CBD does not show up in drug tests, which what that means is when you go to a standard over-the-counter marijuana drug test, they're testing for is THC and THC derivatives.
Sure.
So they're not actually testing for CBDs. But with that being said, I don't know about hair, urine, blood.
Yeah.
So there's, again, a lot of gray area with this.
And it definitely,
if it's legal
are we
state,
evolving to a point? Are they planning on making drug tests that test for CBD?
Yeah.
Or, like, is there even a point to doing that?
Right.
Very interesting.
So those are the two main ones. And I do want to mention two other cannabinoid compounds really quickly, just because they are starting to get more spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
One is CBN, which is cannabinol. Which is basically like CBD light, quote, CBD light.
Okay.
So it shares characters and benefits of CBDs, and it's really being studied heavily as a sleep aid.
Ooh.
And most hemp plants, again, with high amounts of CBN, are carrying low amounts of THC. And the
I should try that.
Yeah.
I've been having trouble sleeping.
Oh, yeah. Lots of natural products now trying to solve that problem instead of just, pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, I've been using melatonin a little bit, but I can only take so much or else I will not wake up in the morning.
Totally, me too. And it kind of like Fs me up too. If I wake up in the middle of the night anyways, something wakes me up that I'm like in a weird dream state. Melatonin.
All right, CBN is the new hot shit.
Yeah. So, and then the other cannabinoid compound that I would like to mention, give a little shout out to, is THCV, tetrahydrocannabivarin.
Ooh, that was a mouthful. I like it.
So that is a psychoactive property like THC. And from what I've read, it's actually what THC is before THC is activated. It's THCV. And THCV as a property is considered an appetite suppressant. It has caffeine-like effects. It creates elated feelings and they think might stimulate bone growth as well. So sativa strains of cannabis that you might get in a dispensary are high in THCV. That's the get up and go.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's being studied a lot more as well.
Awesome. Well, you nailed that. Well done. I think this is the point where we should mention, like, so cannabis and weed specifically, it gets like, as we've seen through the war on drugs, this really crazy stigma that's starting to reverse. But it's not the only thing that messes with your mind. It's not the only thing you can ingest to mess with your mind.
And a lot of body systems. Yeah.
And a lot of people would not argue it is or would argue that it is not as dangerous as some of the other drugs that it's classified with.
Yeah, totally. So I will touch on that briefly. Do want to point out that you are ingesting things every day and every week that are also considered mind-altering and, like, stimulating substances as well. So, admittedly, yes, cannabis is a drug. It is an intoxicant and categorized as a class of drugs, cannabinoids. But alcohol is also a drug and an intoxicant, and it's categorized and classified as a drug as well. The main difference between cannabinoids and alcohol is that alcohol is sanctioned, taxed, and regulated by the government, and weed isn't. Well, and now it is. In 10 states, it is.
Yeah. Can you tell the story about when you went to Total Wine looking for the hemp wine?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So one of the first places I rolled into was Total Wine because hashtag sponsor me. I buy a lot of stuff from you. And so I walked in, and one of the sommeliers, always spot on, approached me and said, you know, what can I help you find? Anything specific? And I said, yes, actually. For an event, a project, am looking for a hemp oil-infused wine. I know Albertsons has it, but I thought I'd come to you first. And, oh, Teeny, this gentleman, this older gentleman, looked me up and down, shook his head, looked at the ground, a spot like 4 feet away from me, and said, no, we are not a company that's associated with drugs, and you won't find anything like that here.
Except for the aisles and aisles and aisles of beer, liquor, and wine.
A purveyor of alcohol. Also, Mr. Sommelier, man, you're basically like a glorified drug dealer, so get off your, like, high horse.
Yes, seriously.
That was a very off-putting experience. Felt very judgy. So I went to an independent liquor store in Oakland area of Dallas, Flamingo, shout out. Also, hashtag sponsor us, which did have it, and they were very cool about it. But, yeah, it was difficult to get a lot of stigma, but people forget that alcohol is also a drug and an intoxicant. It's actually the most widely used substance across the country in the U.S.
Used and abused. On this podcast.
It's legal in some way in all 50 states, and it has numerous effects on the body systems, including the respiratory system, the central nervous system. It's a depressant, so it slows everything down. And it also creates feelings of euphoria and lowers your inhibitions.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What? Yeah, I've never experienced that. Weird. So, examples of alcohol are beer, wine, and liquor. We talked about cannabinoids, active ingredients in cannabinoids, similar to THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, stuff that makes you feel high, create feelings of elation and euphoria. And then I'll just mention quickly the three other classes of drugs is opioids, depressants, and stimulants. Opioids, you know, is painkillers, heroin, oxycodone. Depressants are considered barbiturates and benzodiazepines, which are just mind chemical altering drugs like Valium, Xanax, pentobarbital. And then stimulants are things that get your central nervous system kicking and up and going and feeling alert and awake, or paranoid and fixated, depending on how you are. And that's methamphetamines and cocaine. And so for medical professionals, that's where the drug and, you know, addict specialists, that's where the drug classifications typically end. But there are three other widely used and probably abused substances worth talking about on the street today, in your homes, in your pantry. And I'm talking about caffeine, sugar, and tobacco. So caffeine, the legal stimulant, speeds up the central nervous system. Widely used across the U.S. You can easily buy it, probably underage. I don't know. Is there a legal age
for coffee? There is not an age limit for coffee. Although my history teacher in like something like ninth grade or eighth grade, I brought coffee to school because I wanted to drink coffee. Mm-hmm. She looked at me and she was like,
so adult.
Yeah, Miss Rafferty, shout out. Like,
yeah. So aggressively, aggressive shout out.
She was like, that stuff's going to stunt your growth.
I was like, actually a myth. It will not from all the research I've done.
Bitch, I'm not getting any taller.
Yeah. I'm full grown. This is me. Yeah, I'm just a compact human.
Yeah.
Thanks for rubbing it in. Yeah. So you can just buy at any age, but there is actually a lethal dose, an LD number, lethal dose
of caffeine.
Yeah. So it's about 10 milligrams or the equivalent of about 50 cups of coffee or a tablespoon of extract.
Or one Red Bull.
Oh, yeah. half a five hour energy. So it may be habit forming, but it's not considered truly addictive in the way that like heroin is.
Yeah. Okay. And.
But it
sorry
is
to like
forming.
Have so many anecdotes about caffeine, but my dad, you know, he's been having some health issues,
right.
And he like was told he can't drink caffeine anymore. He used to drink like a pot a day for like decades and decades. No more coffee.
Really?
He hasn't had coffee in like 8 months.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Has he enjoyed it? Has it been hard? Is he drinking tea? I need to know.
We'll talk offline about that later.
Because I feel like, can you tell, I maybe drink too much caffeine as well.
I have at least a cup of coffee every single day.
Oh, me too. At least one. Every time we come to record, I have my big one that just sit here and nurse on all day. So sugar, and I have to mention, a study in the Neuroscience and Biobehavioral Review, which is a scientific journal, stated that sugar meets the criteria as a substance of abuse and may be addictive to those who binge on it.
Oh.
Habit forming for children and adults, it affects blood levels and brain chemistry, digestive tract, weight, all that good stuff.
Oh my God,
and
yeah.
It's in everything.
Seriously, and especially in my office building around the holidays, like I had to instate like a limit on my cookie consumption. I was like, I can only have two cookies a day.
Yeah.
And like that was cutting back.
That is so funny. Yeah, I struggle with this. I've had I've been stress eating sweet tooth for the last couple of weeks too, and I'm gonna turn into a Snickers bar. I swear to God. And so the last one, chocolate does tobacco
I'll
and nicotine.
Snack on you.
Yeah. some sort of hungry pun here. Insert here. Yeah. Okay. So tobacco and nicotine stimulates the nervous system, can cause feelings of relaxation, euphoria, or dizziness and disgusting vomity. If you're me. It causes lung damage and lung disease, emphysema, COPD, and causes cancer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's the truth. Don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, like no judgment if you do, but like maybe just like one day try not.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned a lethal dose for caffeine.
Yeah, doesn't that sound
scary.
Intense?
Yeah. Do all these other drugs that you mentioned, do they have like a legal dose,
most
like a solidified?
Do. So just to really like simplify it, and there's a lot of different versions of this LD number, but yes, LD, the lethal dose, how much you on average, an average human would consume would be lethal.
So also like, don't take this is your limit? Because
yeah, no, yeah. I would definitely die way before then. So I'll just run through a couple of them really quickly. So LD for the number for coffee was 50 cups.
Mm-hmm.
Any guess on booze? Any guesses? Any takers? Higher than I thought.
Like, I don't know, like 20.
I would have guessed around 22. It's actually around 30. I would die around 20 if I took 20 shots. You
Holy
know.
Cow. Yeah. I had a boyfriend who, when he went to college, he called me on his 21st birthday thinking he was dying because he stupidly took 21 shots for his 21st birthday.
That's how I know this is a really bad idea. I saw like a 60-minute special on it when I was like in middle school. And like, scared me straight.
Yep.
No shots. So don't take shots. I only sip them.
Okay. What's the next
so
one?
So 30 drinks. Cocaine.
Cocaine.
20 lines. I don't know what their definition of a line is, but
that's still
20.
Fuck ton.
That's still a lot.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
I don't know. I'm not a cocainer.
That's 10 for each nostril.
Cocaine, but that sounds like a lot.
Yeah. Sounds like I'm not sleeping for a week.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one is MDMA or ecstasy. That's on average like 14 to 16 pills. Which also is a lot.
That's not right. You can die from way less than that.
Right. That's also what I thought. Because you never know what it's mixed with either, which might be some other derivative. And there's a whole other story about like the fight for decriminalizing all drugs and having testing centers for people that are going to do them anyways to find out if it's safe before they ingest that many or something
we'll,
like that.
We'll figure out a way to work all of that into another episode.
There's a whole rabbit hole here. But, okay, same thing with codeine or, like, painkillers. It's around 14 to 16 pills, but I know people with problems who have taken way more than that and people who have died taking way less. So, again, don't trust these numbers totally.
Yeah.
But, okay, so all that, like, 30, 20, 14, how many weeds do you think you have to do to die? How many? So they measure in joints. How many joints do you think you'd have?
If you're taking that much pot. Oh,
yeah, wow. Ben, what's your guess?
40?
40.
40 joints?
That's a great guess. But their estimation is 2,000 joints. You would have to smoke 2,000 joints to reach the lethal dose. And I'm not sure if anyone ever actually has. And that may be different with all the concentrates and things that are on the market now as things legalize. And there's, again, a whole other rabbit hole there.
Well, and wasn't there some guy in Canada who tried to smoke himself to death, like, several years ago?
Oh, that sounds
and basically to prove it wrong, it was like, this guy smoked 100 pounds of weed and he doesn't have any problems or something.
Does he now? What is the long-term effects of that? Sounds like an intense, like, way, like, was a lot on the line to, like, just prove a point.
I mean, it's Canada. It was probably the winter. He probably didn't have much else to do.
Anyway, hot boxing.
He was like, I smoke this much every winter. Anyways, I might as well document
it. Fucking ice fishing, smoking his little cabin out.
Well, that's cool. Well, 2,000 joints, which I think is hilarious because if you've ever done a pot, you know, like, smoking a whole joint to yourself is like not. I mean, you can, but that's more of like a social hour thing typically.
Yeah,
and so to do 2,000 to yourself just sounds absurd.
I wouldn't. My lungs would hurt way too much.
Like, what is that even? So anyways, that being said, because it seems considerably safer than a lot of these other stimulants that are just over the counter.
2,000 joints or 30 drinks.
Yeah. So why is there such a stigma around weed? Why is
there such
a stink around weed?
I know the answer.
Please enlighten
me. I'm raising my hand high.
Yeah, please.
To answer this question. Okay.
Front row.
Your joke was better. The war on drugs.
Oh,
the war on drugs.
This is a long and sordid story, but...
Yeah, so today's stigma, much like we have a lot of hangover effects from Prohibition, there is a lot of hangover effects from the war on drugs. And the war on drugs loosely started. There wasn't, like, an official movement yet. Mm-hmm. But in 1909, there was the first piece of legislation. It was, like, the first recorded instance of banning non-medical use of a drug, and that was the Smoking Opium Exclusion Act.
Yeah.
So this is the first time the government said, you're not allowed to use this unless it's your medicine.
Yeah.
And then in 1937, so right after, that was before Prohibition, then they prohibited alcohol. So that was kind of like a ban on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1937, the Marijuana Tax Act was passed. And it's actually spelled with an H in this. And according to history.com. So that was
funny.
Hence pronunciation. And that federal law, it actually placed a tax on the sale of cannabis, hemp, and marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And then enter President Richard M. Nixon, who signed the Controlled Substance Acts, plural or singular, Controlled Substance Act into law in 1970. So all of that is sort of why, and that's when you started seeing all of that propaganda that's, you know, like, smoke weed, die. This is your brain on drugs.
Yeah, which is some of my favorite commercials growing up.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's not when you started to see those.
I know.
But those were even the lasting effects.
You don't look at them as scary and think about them as, like, some of them as funny. Some of them are pretty good.
Totally.
The dog talking to you.
Yeah.
I'm so disappointed in you.
So disappointed.
Like, who are you even?
Is talking to me?
So funny. Go look those up if you don't know. Like, Google it.
Anti-drug
commercials.
American U.S. drug commercials. Yeah. And so basically since then, it's been a really long and slow process to unravel all of that. And I mean, with good reason. Like, I don't know if people should be using opium on a daily basis, especially recreationally. However, the marijuana propaganda, what was the super famous weed movie. It's like marijuana.
Reefer Madness.
Yeah. The Reefer Madness era, that was like some seriously overblown shit.
Yeah.
And so fast forward to today, after we've slowly unraveled this motherfucking crochet, 10 states have legalized marijuana for recreational purposes. 34 states have approved weed for medical purposes. 13 have added decriminalization. And Texas has none of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. I mean, we did
but
sort
Dallas
of.
Dallas has cite and release, right?
Yeah, because they're just really bogged down. Like, can you imagine how much marijuana bogs down a city like Dallas?
Well, no, and cite and release is nothing like decriminalization. Cite and release, it just means we're not arresting you on the spot.
Oh, but here's a slip of paper to come to court.
Yeah, and you can still go to jail. So, like, that's not real reform. Like, you don't have to go to jail in that instance.
Yeah, that's like flashy media reform. The heck? Wow, I was gullible. I got.
I know.
But can I also mention that the Nixon Substance Control Act was very politically driven because of the hippies in the streets were protesting him.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, you should watch Narcos. No, you should. Yeah, yeah. If you want to get into more nitty-gritty detail about, like, the 80s drug campaign and Say No to Drugs and the flow of drugs behind that, the Narcos series on Netflix is great as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of all of that, let's talk about the racist roots of the anti-drug campaign.
So you laid out a very great skeleton or timeline. So I just want to pop back over a couple points and really tie them back into their actually racist context and connotation of the time. So this is a really loaded topic, and we could spend a long time talking about this. But to put it succinctly, while the U.S. was passing this Exclusion Act you mentioned in 1909, there was a couple other things going on. So the Smoking Opium Exclusion Act of 1909. So about the 50 years before that, smoking opium and having miracle marijuana tinctures was very vogue for the upper white class.
Really?
But also the immigrants coming in, specifically Chinese immigrants, were consuming opium. So, so they got it off the streets so immigrants couldn't have it, but they kept it kind of legal for like the upper echelon white class to like still get it.
An exemption for white people.
Yeah, so that's fascinating.
It's very curious.
Yeah, and then you, and also around that same time, at that turn of the century in Mexico, a lot of tension was broiling. So there was a big civil war and coup and just all around violence going on in Mexico. So a lot of people immigrated up north to the U.S. Around 890,000 people legally immigrated and took refuge from the Mexico to the U.S.
Wow.
And while cannabis at that time was medicinally used in the U.S., really with the Mexican immigrants, it came, the habit of smoking it recreationally kind of came with that influx of immigrants. Right. So, and that's almost a million people, and that's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
And especially when, like, maybe 10 years later, the Depression hits. Mm-hmm. And so this big influx of immigrants was obviously getting the blame. So into the 30s, the 1930s, Harry Anslinger, this is a gentleman you may have heard of, he really tripled down on the public's uncomfortable view and slightly racist filter on immigrants and cannabis, and led a campaign that shaped the drug laws in our country for decades. And that's who in 1937 passed that marijuana tax act that you mentioned, which more specifically like criminalized marijuana, but then also put a tax on it. So anyone growing it, handling it, anything, it just put a kibosh on.
Yeah, basically just like put a kibosh on the industry.
Yeah, and just for a second. There you go. And if just for a second you think that Anslinger was just a square and trying to be square with.
He wasn't like part of the temperance
movement. He wasn't intentionally racist. Let me give you a quote from him. He said, "Reefers makes," and there is a slur here that I'm not going to use, but "reefer makes these people think they're as good as white men. The primary reason to outlaw marijuana is its effect on the degenerate races." Right. And he also was quoted as saying marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind, and most marijuana smokers are Negroes, Hispanics, Filipinos, and entertainers.
Wow. So
right. Yeah. So that's uncomfortable. It makes me feel words uncomfortable coming out of my mouth. And weird to throw like entertainers in there. Oddly, like this whole is this all really wacky and just wrong. So and he's even credited with popularizing the use of the word marijuana because he used it in his campaign because it had such a decidedly Latin and scary exotic feel to it.
Oh my God.
Right. So
this guy's a fucking piece of work.
Right, so he really...
Who is he? Like, why does he have clout like
he
this?
He just worked for the government, and he became, you know, just really involved with the legislation around drug laws. And so he also really mired racist sentiments into drug connotation.
Okay.
And then through the 40s and the 60s, through the Zoot Suit Riots and the Civil Rights Movements, to present day, you see a disproportionately high number of minorities and people of color that are targeted and more severely punished during stops, searches, arrests, convictions, and sentencing. There is a higher rate of mandatory minimum sentences placed upon people of color. Sorry, I get worked up about this. Tina's like, slow down. I'm like, and people of color are also more likely to be killed by law enforcement. So through decades of government propaganda and laws that punish addicts instead of treating them, there is a stigma and stereotype around cannabis use and minorities who use it.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. And I hope that
through
cannabis legalization and desensationalization, the stigma and stereotypes will...
I think we're on our way. I can't speak for the stereotypes and like the law enforcement thing is its own piece all to fucking together. But in terms of general acceptance, I think as new generations move into the positions of power in our country, there is a more relaxed attitude towards cannabis and weed, saying like, okay,
yeah, that's
we're,
true.
We're,
that's very hopeful and positive. Yeah.
Yeah. Weed does not kill people like heroin kills people. You're not going to smoke a joint and die. Like if you shoot up heroin and immediately die.
Or like harm your family, harm yourself, harm, you know, it's just.
Yeah. Totally. And
so, and I'll mention too, in the last year or two, I tagged along to a dispensary in San Francisco, and it was my first experience in the legal and professional side of it. And I was so impressed. The facility was so professional, so clean, and really stylish.
Yeah, it's no longer, it's not like walking into a head shop with tapestries and incense anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that like stoner culture.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to say like water bong at the counter.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Water bong or water pipe?
No, water pipe. Water pipe. Yeah, not bong.
Water bong.
Yeah.
Don't say bong. They'll kick you out.
And yeah, at no point did it feel gross or unsafe. The experience and purchase was, you know, thought it was really neat. And I thought how cool it would be if you could purchase everything that way. Like go... They call your name. You get private attention at a counter, guided through the store stock, help to make a selection that fits your needs and budget, like
I mean,
with wine, clothes, anything. I would love to shop.
Laura,
like that.
There are services like that. We just can't afford them.
Oh, am I just not a millionaire status? It's like, this is so luxury.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, dispensaries, for bringing that luxury to the people.
Yeah, the people who can't. Yeah, the mass market.
Yeah.
The everyday woman.
Well,
all right.
Should we take a quick break here?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be right back. Hey guys, we hope you're enjoying the episode, but while we have your attention, we wanted to take a quick second to tell you about one of our favorite podcasts.
We've been binge listening to We Like Drinking, and we're super excited to share the show with you guys. This award-winning podcast is about beer and wine.
Love.
It's educational.
Yas.
And these guys are so funny, like literally laugh out loud funny.
Jeff, and John at We Like Drinking cover all sorts of topics from the craft beer and wine industries, but they also have a lot of industry guests on, which is pretty cool. Sam Slaughter, a popular booze reporter, was just on there.
Madeline Puckett from Wine Folly, one of my personal favorites, and Elizabeth Snyder, too, from Wine for Normal People, which was actually the very first podcast I started listening to.
And big news, your girls are going to be featured on an upcoming episode of We Like Drinking. So if you haven't already, go subscribe. You're going to love it.
Cheers, y'all.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. We love making this show, and we hope you enjoy listening to it, too.
That's right, and we want to give a huge shout-out to our very first Patreon donor, Jeremy.
Whoop, whoop! Jeremy was so kind to pledge at the happy hour date level, which means he gets a shout-out on air, as well as an invitation to our postseason happy hour.
If you want a shout-out on air, you can pledge as a drinking buddy, and to be invited to our end-of-season happy hour, donate at the happy hour date level. And to really knock our socks off, our top tier is Pick Your Poison, where donors can pick a topic for an upcoming episode.
Go to patreon.com/grapesandgrain to pledge your monthly contribution today.
Cheers, y'all. She's like, obviously, well, you can't have them, but you don't need an EpiPen.
Yeah.
It's like, great. Grapes.
Grapes. Grains. Hi, welcome back. Okay. Thanks for sticking with us. That was a lot of information about cannabis itself.
It's so fascinating, I think.
I think a lot of that really does set the stage, though, for how it interacts in that industry and the stigma, how it intersects mm-hmm. with beer and wine.
Yes, it really does. All around the same time, there's all similar prohibitions happening. And, yeah, it just very follows the same roller coaster.
Yeah, and because of those stigmas, the industry, at least for beer, has been sort of slow to adopt. Well, actually, they've been quick since legalization, but it's been a really tricky road to adopt using cannabis, which is this, like, sister product to hops.
So similar, in yeah. beer. You would think maybe, yeah, cannabis hopped beer. Is that, like, a thing? Like, get it in there.
Yeah. Well, there are several examples, but because of the fuzzy line between cannabis, hemp, hops.
Right. It is, yeah.
Because of the fuzziness around legality, the hemp plant has been manipulated all sorts of different ways to get in beer. So I mentioned New Belgium's Hemperer earlier that is made with hemp hearts, and hemp hearts are legal. You can buy them at Whole Foods. They're great supplements and smoothie supplements because of their health benefits and the oils in there. But then we've also had an instance of a brewery trying to use CBD. So a place called Dad and Dude's Breweria in Aurora, Colorado, they were the first brewery to make a beer that actually had, like, CBD in it. And I had the pleasure of trying it at the Great American Beer Festival.
Oh, wow.
And when I talked to the owners then, you know, there was a line down the booth. And he said that, yes, we've gotten approval from the TTB. And we are going to roll this out nationwide. And I was like, are you serious? Like, it's coming to Texas. And he said, yes, we will be in Texas in 6 months. And I was like, okay, cool.
For people who have a medical need for
it? No, commercially available.
Wow, okay.
Commercially available. Huh. But it was called also, I love this, General Washington's Secret Stash.
Cute.
So once they were starting to roll that out and I wrote that story and I like went back to them, I was like, man, it's been a while. And I looked it up and the TTB after a CBD got a lot of media attention and there was sort of a frenzy around it. The TTB rescinded their permit to distribute that beer.
Huge buzz.
Yeah.
Take it back.
They thought that it was probably controversial and they didn't know the legality of it.
Come on. Maybe life is controversial. Be bold, TCB.
So that they really like put the cut. They snuffed that shit out.
Yeah.
But there is hope yet because Dad and Dude's Breweria was just. I know that was. It's the only instance I've ever heard that terminology in a
silly
corporate name. They were just bought by a bigger company called the Cannabineers.
Oh, so, the Cannabineers. Is this owned by the Lumineers? Is that their like side hustle?
Kapaw! Or wait, I was. The chicken ears or the cannabineers. Okay, never mind. So the cannabineers, they're a lifestyle brand, and they peddle all products from creams to coffee.
Now, okay, lifestyle product. What does that even mean? I feel like there's so many lifestyle product brands right now.
Goop.
That's literally the one I was thinking.
It's like an all-encompassing.
Does Kanye have one? What does that even mean? Here's some decor, some nutrition health supplements.
Yeah.
Here's some fucking
headphones.
Things
that I approve of.
Yeah. Okay. That's their lifestyle brand.
But
here's,
actually,
here's my Oprah's favorite things of my life, but I'm a different celebrity.
Okay, but unlike those people, like, the Cannabineers actually produce their products, so they're buying up facilities to actually produce creams, coffee, things, a whole CBD line.
Okay.
They currently already
CBD coffee creamer. Start your day off chill.
Yeah. They actually already have a brewery in San Diego called Two Roots Brewing that makes an entire line of CBD beers. So these have zero THC. So again, with the trade-off, you got to pick and choose your.
That would be a bit much if it was like alcoholic, THC, CBD. Like, yeah, I feel like you could really mess yourself up drinking a six-pack.
And the Cannabineers are also one of the first companies to release a THC beer also.
Oh,
that's going to be non-alcoholic, though.
Okay.
So again, choosing.
Again,
trade-up.
Choosing your cannabinoid. It'll be a beer, and it'll have 2.5 to 5 milligrams of THC.
Nice. I like it a little smaller, like 2.5. I can like socially drink and like not lose myself.
Like how much THC is in a joint?
I don't know.
Well, you could switch off. You could do one THC. You could do one alcohol beer, one THC beer, one alcohol beer. And then you're just like on and off throughout the night. I want to tell you guys about one more THC beer. It's by Sierra Brewing Company. And this brewery was founded by the maker, like the guy behind Blue Moon, basically.
Right.
And it's also non-alcoholic. It has 5 milligrams of THC. And it's a beer similar to Blue Moon. So it's probably like a white ale with coriander. And it's available in
so good.
Colorado, California, and Nevada.
Wow.
Yes. So
yummy.
Also, if you're going to be looking for either of these styles of beer, you're going to find CBD beers, much like the soda, out in retail accounts, way more widespread. And then THC beers are traditionally going to be sold at places where you can buy THC products, so like dispensaries. And then what makes the Cannabineers particularly fascinating is that their 5 styles of beer are made using traditional methods. And then they strip the alcohol from the product using a European manufactured de-alcoholization equipment.
Okay.
Which I had never heard of before. I mean, I guess maybe that's how you make non-alcoholic beer. I don't really drink
that. That's interesting. We should look more into that process one day.
Yeah. And then they take that liquid and they ship it to a secondary facility that they have where it's infused with THC. So they're not like brewing with THC.
Yeah. Very fascinating. Ben, I do want to answer your question really quickly. How much THC might be in a joint? It depends. If you are smoking a gram in a joint, which it's a gram is a roughly 200 milligrams serving of THC. So a lot of edibles are in 5 to 10 milligram servings of THC. So,
And what was the beer?
2.5 to 5.
Yeah.
And then the second one that I mentioned was 5.
Right.
Yeah. So like half doses.
Yeah. And you give a little bit more control, which is good because honestly, I think when you ingest them orally, digestively, they kick in harder. In my opinion.
Yeah.
So you have a little more control about how much you're ingesting.
So what's the deal? Like, how is it like a similar structure or approach to winemaking with these products?
So cannabis and wine have a very interesting history. They have a very long and old practice together, actually. So infusing or aromatizing wine and spirits with different herbs has been a thing in cultures for a super long time, and a ton of different cultures. And it's usually different herbs and fruits from the area. Well, of course, if humans are grabbing a bunch of botanicals and throwing them into their beverages, they're going to stumble across cannabis one day.
Sure.
Yeah.
People making beer used to do that, too. They would just forage in their area and turn that into beer.
Yeah. But, like, it's spring. You're like, heck, yeah, grab this. This didn't kill us when we ate it last spring. Like, let's throw some of that in there. So one of our earliest records of a culture infusing wine with cannabis is during the Han Dynasty in China, where a surgeon named Hua Tuo would add cannabis resin to wine to use as anesthetic or just kind of to knock you out. It'd really just mess you up and put you under. So,
cool.
And
question mark.
So we don't have his formula. We don't have a lot of other documentation for it through the ages, but how is it being utilized in wine today? So in about a few different ways. The one we drink today is a hemp oil. Mm-hmm. So it's the most innocuous and like chill way to kind of slip some cannabis products into your stuff is hemp oil.
And we weren't tasting the hemp oil, were we?
No, I didn't taste any. So sometimes it's added for flavor or scent, like in lotions or hair products. So when you're
I just smelled it.
That really like coats your mouth.
Yeah.
So when you're cooking, you can use hemp oil, so you'll get some flavor there. So low-grade hemp oils and hemp tinctures, simply there to infuse a smaller flavor into the hemp product. But quality hemp oil is made from the seeds and packs a nutritional punch. Hemp oil made from the seeds is high in omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acid, antioxidants like vitamin E and carotene, magnesium and calcium, and is an unsaturated fat.
So that means that beer that I mentioned earlier is high in all of those since it's made from hemp parts.
And this too, this... sweet tea concoction is high in all of those things. And that's what even the company is quoted as saying, like, we just want to help people.
Mm.
Cool. Thanks.
Cool. I will politely decline.
So, but hemp seed oil, BT dubs, does not have a very high smoke point, which means it kind of falls apart and the chemical structures fall apart when temperatures reach higher than 300 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's often added to food and beverages as an additive after the product has been cooked or distilled. So in the wine, the oil, hemp oil, would have been added after fermentation.
Okay.
So some examples of companies doing this are Texas Vineyard Markets with the hemp oil-infused wine we had today, and Mary Jane's Magical Hemp Wines up in Canada.
They leaned hard into that.
They were just like free fell, trust fell back into the marijuana industry, Mary Jane industry.
Okay, what other ways can cannabis be
that's
used?
Hemp oil. CBD oil can also be used in wine products. And this is definitely something I think I could get behind. So you get home from a hard day of work, you want to sit with your best friend or your significant other, have a cool glass of Chardonnay or rosé, and it has a little something extra in it to de-stress you. Like something subtle, not, you know, you're drowning sorrows in a whole bottle of wine by yourself, or you're going full party mode with THC wine. But I'm talking about just CBD extract or oil in your wine. So that adds antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, it helps with sleep aid, anti-anxiety, and CBD wines seem to be more widely available than either the hemp or the THC wines as well.
Not around here, though?
I mean, soon. So one of the companies I was going to mention that is trying to do this in Texas is CBD Vines. Mm-hmm. And that is also, oddly enough, a different kind of vineyard or company that's partnering with, and I may be wrong with the nitty-gritty business details here, but it's partnering with the Texas Vineyard Markets as well, TVM, who did the Seduction covert cocktails that we're having. They are also partnering with CBD Vines, which is trying to add CBD oil to Texas wines.
Okay.
And then there's another company called Cannavines out of California, but that's not actually available for consumers on the market. You can only get it through doing like California cannabis tours and like getting tastings and things like that.
Interesting.
Right. So, and then the other way you can infuse cannabis into your drinking product is THC. And rumor has it, from the rumor mill on the internet, what I could find.
Murder
around
the campfire.
Yeah.
Were you on the Silk Road or something?
California legalized medicinal cannabis a little while ago. Yeah. And certain California winemakers have already been experimenting with weed wine, and they kept it low-key with friends and family. But now the gloves are off, and now that recreational marijuana or cannabis, I'm sorry, I guess I should say cannabis more, that we decided that there's racist roots of marijuana. Cannabis, and Sonoma County is really a hotbed of cannabis and wine experimentation in California. And
that doesn't surprise me.
Right? Not really. That's when you were like humble.
Iconic. Yeah. Weed growing area.
Totes. So the first bottle of commercial THC weed wine was produced by Rebel Coast Winery and released in October of 2018 out of California. But it's the same deal as your beer. It has no alcohol, only THC, and it's only available at dispensaries. So there's some things to note about this company. They have a really fun website. Their winemaker is like the hipsteriest hipster to ever hip with his mustache and his turquoise rings
when you
and his
hip,
denim button down.
Yeah.
I giggled when I saw this photo. And each glass of wine as well is about 5 milligrams of THC, which we said was about half the standard serving of an edible. And on the website, it says it's that low serving so you can, quote, enjoy it at a party and still be able to talk to everyone, which is, thank you. That's a great, very thoughtful of you.
Relatable.
We know y'all are going to try to drink a whole bottle of wine, so there's only 20 milligrams THC in this.
He knows his audience.
I know, right? And there's also only 35 calories per glass because, as they say, if you remove the alcohol, it apparently removes the calories.
Jesus.
And also no alcohol, so no hangover. Boom.
Oh, my God.
I know. They make a good case, don't they?
Yes.
And
that's the first time I've heard it put that way.
I don't like, though, that they claim that they're bringing, quote, weed wine to the world for the first time, because hashtag know your roots, THC has been added since, you know, the Han Dynasty.
Yeah, right.
It can be added, THC can be added by using an oil or an extract, like I mentioned earlier, the THVC that converts into THC when it's heated to a certain element. That's what happens when you put flame to it in a joint or pipe situation.
Gotcha.
You can recreate that chemical reaction by putting it in your cannabis in an oven, low and slow, and it brings the THVC up to heat to convert it to THC, and then you grind that to a powder, put it in a cheesecloth, or like put the buds in cheesecloth and soak it in your wine. And yeah, so that will, after you can do it cold for a couple days or like in an Instant Pot or something for like an hour or two, but I would probably just go the cold route.
Oh, of course, they have an Instant Pot recipe for this.
Of course. And then I mentioned the major player here is Rebel Coast Cannabis Infused Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
And I do want to mention one more thing. I tried to find really, really hard for this show, and it's on a kind of cousin limb related, like we talked about, was hops. Dry hopped wine or ciders. Not exactly infused with cannabis, but dang it, I love it. And I tried so hard. I went to like 8 different places. I called all around the city. Everyone, most people were kind of confused about, they were like, hops are in beer. Like,
no shit.
Thanks. But so after the wine is fermented, it'll be dry hopped basically like a beer. Like hops are added for aromatics and to add levels to the beverage.
Didn't we have a dry hopped beer at the opening of the new Bishop's Cider Company?
Boom. I was going to mention that because except that it was not a beer. It was a cider because it was a Bishop's Cider Company. But yes, we did. Bishop Cider at their opening of their second location had an experimental dry hopped cider, and it was
Wasn't it a series of ciders?
It was so good. Yeah, it was like 4 different ones, and they were amazing.
Wait, hopped with 4 different hops.
Yeah. Like Simcoe,
Citra.
Yeah. There's another pine.
Probably
one.
The Cool Guy hops.
Oh man. Remember? So yeah, Vogel. So please make more of that, Bishop Cider Company.
And literally every cider maker listening to this.
And I get it because I talked to the Flamingo's owner, that independent, and someone who works with a cidery, but there's just not a market for drier, interesting ciders. Like, if you're a cider drinker, you're typically a sweet drink drinker.
Yeah, you know? I can relate to that.
Commercially. Like, maybe one day that'll, like, start to evolve. But.
Yeah, because I don't like sweet ciders, but you know my sister. Cider is her fucking jam, because she likes Willy Wonka shots and shit.
Yeah, I can't drink sugar like that. I like all my drinks real dry and bitter. But I should also mention Infinite Monkey Theorem has dry-hopped products as well. I think a Pinot Grigio and a pear cider.
Ooh.
So, yeah, get on it, y'all. Please make this for us. They are so yummy, and it's like one of the closest things I can get to an IPA until I can find an amazing gluten-free IPA.
Infinite Monkey Theorem
is
scouting a location in Deep Ellum to open a winery.
Get the out.
Yeah, actually, I'm the only person who knows that, so I got to investigate that before we release
that. Yeah, let's edit that out so I can get a job before anyone else does. Yeah, when are they coming? I'm going to send them my resume.
I don't know. They're not. Mm-mm-mm-mm. We'll talk offline.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, edit that shit out.
So where do we go from here?
So it's pretty trendy, but is it an actual viable path for the future of beer and wine?
From a beer perspective, absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
You think so? Staying power.
I think so. Just because of the relationship between cannabis and hops, and then also anything that's trendy plus like possible medicinal benefits. That's
people
want to
feel good
greatness.
About their alcohol. Like Michelob Ultra has taught us anything. It's that people want to feel good about drinking booze.
Even if it's a false sense of whatever.
Yeah, we won't go again, another rabbit hole.
Yeah. But actually, a lot of alcohol manufacturers were worried that increased cannabis consumption from recreational legalization would actually decrease booze consumption.
Well, if it was legal, I might not like go out to the bar as much. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, actually, it turns out that there was like, sure, maybe that was a fear and like a reasonable fear.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 recent studies by the Brewers Association and the Distilled Spirits Council found that there's absolutely no evidence of people choosing one or the other.
So I was researching that same thing for wine, and I found that like a year ago, year and a half ago, there was all these like doomsday articles that were like, this is going to crash the booze industries. This works in phylloxera. And then I saw like one thing recently that was like, nah, y'all chill.
Yeah, everybody take a CBD pill.
Yeah, or just take a CBD in seat. Thank you.
Well, actually in Colorado, so Colorado's been sort of the poster child for the legalization movement just because they like really thought it out well, and it's a big tourist thing now.
Good for them.
So spirit sales have actually...
Spirits of Colorado.
Yeah, but the spirit sales have actually increased since legalization. So
prove them wrong.
The study was not by any means suggesting a correlation, but
this happenstance.
It was showing that like all the states are following national trends in terms of sales and consumption of alcohol.
Very cool. Well, that's good to know. I won't feel bad about anything that I do then.
Yeah, right. So what about wine? Do you think it has any staying power in that industry?
Okay, so based off of this like hashtag stoner culture, forbidden wine, hemp oil. My initial gut reaction was no, this is just a gimmicky phase with wine. But I will reservedly take back that opinion for two reasons. The first is that infusing wine with cannabis has been going on, like we discussed, for thousands of years. Since, yeah.
What's old is new.
Yeah. So how the hell is it going to be a gimmick or a flash in the pan if it's been being practiced for thousands of years across the world, basically until the criminalization of cannabis? So, meh. And my second reason for maybe changing my opinion is I researched CBD and THC-infused wines, and they did not all seem like this sweet sugar trash. Like, again, I'm sorry. I'm being so hard on you guys, but it's just not my – if you were into sweet pre-cocktails, you should, go for it. This
it
is for you.
Not be called wine.
No. This isn't a wine, though. It's, yeah. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be called or look like wine.
It's my wine bottle. Yeah. It is a straight-up wine bottle. Okay. Anyways. The second reason for my change of heart is that in researching it, not all of them seemed as gimmicky, kitschy, as trashy as this. I will keep an open mind when it comes to other products, and the CBD does sound very intriguing. I might mm-hmm. enjoy that. And the THC, if it comes from a real functioning winery and it's not just like a gimmicky 420 thing, mm-hmm. And it's a quality product, sure, I would try it maybe. And, you know, stoners will for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just to see, like, if it works.
Even the worst stuff.
What the experience is.
Even at the CBD stuff, they were like, within 20 minutes, people were like, cannabis products and, like, grabbing it off the shelf. You know what I mean? Like, even if you're not into, like, good wine or you're not into it, like, even if you're just, you know, avid recreational cannabis users, it would be a new market to tap.
Absolutely.
Where you wouldn't be selling these products in the first place. So,
and then it's also a little less taboo for people who may have like chronic health or pain issues.
Yeah.
And they live in a state like Texas where there's a huge taboo on weed.
Yeah.
So they don't want to smoke weed because they feel like they're doing something wrong. But if they could drink a wine and it could just be like their normal activity and they could have all of those sort of benefits.
Right. Yeah. So it's very, it's got a lot of potential. It's got some legs.
But I don't.
Is there any movers or shakers in the beer and weed industry that we should keep an eye out for or know about specifically?
Definitely. So this is, again, a very new territory, but Cannabineer seems to be the one that's pioneering it.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are they this bigger brand with one brewery, they are that one brewery in San Diego, Two Roots, as I mentioned, makes about 2,000 barrels a year, and that's of the CBD, non-alcoholic beer, several different styles. But their plan is to acquire up to 4 more breweries across the U.S. beyond Dad and Dude's Deuteria.
Deuteria.
Beyond the Deuteria.
Brewery.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm just keeping it straight in my head. I was like, oh, it will forever be known as the Deuteria in my head if I don't straighten this out right now.
I actually feel like they should change their name to that, to be honest.
Yeah. Call us. We'll talk about a new marketing pitch for you.
Deuteria. 2 rows, and then 4 more. And what they want to do is they want to build their beer brewing capacity up to 500,000 barrels per year.
So they're out there.
They
Get
are
it.
Doubling down, and they're in talks with breweries in California, on the East Coast, in the Midwest. So as states...
They're getting all over,
Yeah, and as the
this
flow...
This is the industry to get into.
Yeah, and as the tide of legalization possibly turns, they want to be in every section of the country to take
they're setting themselves
advantage
up for
of that.
Success.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I couldn't find a lot of industry news about wineries, either large mass produced wineries or small scale production, investing into the cannabis industry. But I am positive it's happening. Like, I'm sure there are private investors or venture capitalists out there who are working in the wine Napa, you know, industry who want to monetize their involvement in cannabis, too.
Totally.
Like, there's no way it's not happening. If we've thought of it, it's already being done.
It's such a natural pairing for California anyway.
Yeah. And naturally, other areas, too, like Oregon and Washington and all these, little sleeper states growing some great wine and
Great
buds and great hops as well. So I just couldn't find anything solid about that actually happening. The only business I found that was relevant to us is that Texas Vineyard Markets, which seems to be trying to distribute and produce and cover all things cannabis, wine, booze related
in
Texas.
They want to be in at the ground level.
Yeah, they're sticking their flag in the dirt. So if any listeners know anything about any cannabis and wine business news, I would love to know more.
Yeah, definitely.
Send an email to grapesingrain@gmail.com and let me know about it.
Totally.
And yeah, I guess I'll just wrap up with, you know, this is absolutely amazing to be young adults in this wild transition, this Wild West transition of cannabis. And it's something I know the generation or two older than us thought would never actually happen. My grandfather actually told me once, while he didn't care about marijuana or people who chose to use it, he didn't believe it would ever be legal. So just too many politicians making money, not enough progressive governments. Well,
sure.
My grandfather died 5 years ago, and on the day he passed away, Colorado legalized recreational marijuana. And they were the first state to do so in the U.S. So, and now 10 states have followed suit, and it really makes me happy to see that the U.S. and other nations are practicing common sense laws around cannabis and legislation to create new business and entrepreneurship opportunities and relax the stigma around it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'll raise a glass to that.
Yeah, cheers, guy.
Well, thank you for joining us on this wild, crazy, green, canna elevated...
The canna coaster.
Oh, my God. We need to pitch Disney on that.
Yes.
All right.
Well, cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured on our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain, @gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Grapes and Grain Podcast. Remember, that's grapes, plural, and grain, singular.
Find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.com to see blog posts that go more in-depth to each episode. You can also download or stream the podcast there.
And of course, find us on Patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. And a huge thank you to Jack and Dorothy Studios for having us in today. We couldn't do it without you, Ben.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today. Cheers.
Cheers.
What you drinking?